Ladies and gentlemen, the probably one of, if not the most insincere question ever asked of humans, one of the most insincere questions asked of humans is when a stand-up comic faces an audience at the beginning of his or her act and says, "How you guys doing?" Those of you who believe that that person really wants to know how you're doing, please report for remedial processing right after this broadcast, because they don't care. They really don't care. Anyway, how am I doing? Because I know you care. I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, because it's Easter Sunday, and there's two big how committed am I to this stupid broadcast? I'm missing two Easter parades. The straight one, where all the ladies in their bonnets, and then the screwed up one hosted by Chris Owens, no relation to anybody I know. Chris Owens, who owns a strip, owns and top lines, you should pardon the expression, at a strip club on Bourbon Street. You see her picture when you fly into the airport. How to describe her? Cokie Roberts with a big rack and a black wig. Okay? I know. You're drooling already. Anyway, she's leading an Easter parade that's supposed to be a little kooky. I'm missing both of them right now to be here. Anyway, but how am I? I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, as I said, without air conditioning. Oh, mercy. But you gotta love the humidity, don't you? Don't you? Really? See, that's another insincere question. Just right on the list, right below, how you guys doing? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you saw him this morning on, I guess he was only on ABC. They got their big get, as they call it in the news booking business. The Sam and Cokie show got the pilot, the actual pilot of the actual plane that was forced down by the Chinese. The other shows had to settle for the co-pilots. And based on seeing that, I'd say the co-pilots can go back in the service. They can go as soon as they've had some R&R, hung out with the relatives and the family until they wish they were with the Chinese again. They can go back up. But the pilot, whose first name is Shane, and really with a first name like that, you don't need a last name. He's so good. I'm telling you right now, if you see him on TV, he is so good. Like the other guy, the co-pilot, half the questions he's asked, how did you land? How did you feel? How did the thing? He starts talking about, his faith in the Lord. I don't want to know that. I want to know how you felt. Shane, on the other hand, Captain Shane, man, he's a good-looking guy. He's got a nice self-effacing way about him. He's absolutely straight arrow. He looks like a grown-up, a young grown-up, but a grown-up. You can believe that for once the system worked, because compared to the other two guys, he should have been the pilot. But there's no way he goes back to the Navy. He goes straight into television. I'm serious. If Richard Hatch thought he had a career after Survivor, this guy, I'm saying he could have a reality show. What a and what a great reality show. You're captured by the Chinese. And anyway, he is excellent. You'll see him and you'll say, Harry's right. He don't belong in the Navy. He belongs on TV. We got to see him every week because he's so cute. And the other story about the aftermath of the Chinese plane incident, everybody, Democrats, Republicans, pundits, politicians alike, is on this particular glory boat, being that what a good idea it was for President Bush not to fly out to Whidbey Island on Saturday to attend the homecoming, the official homecoming of the crew of the EP-3 aircraft. Everybody is saying, this way it belonged to the crew. This way the event wasn't about the president. This is a continuation of what we're seeing is George W. Bush's sort of self-effacing approach to the presidency, where he prefers, to be in this. Okay, I'll take that. But I'll advance just one other theory, ladies and gentlemen. Let's wait and see when an incident like this happens and the crew's homecoming is scheduled for a weekday. Because I believe that the one thing we've learned about this administration so far is this president does not like to leave the ranch on weekends. See, it was he's there. He's at the ranch. So, and why would you want to leave the ranch on a weekend? Because it's so ranch-like. But I'll reserve judgment on the wisdom of his willingness to let the event belong to the participants until they schedule a homecoming on a weekday. I'm not at the ranch. I'm in New Orleans from the French Quarter. Hello, welcome to the show.
Down, feeling down, my This administration is doing everything we can to end the stalemate in an efficient way. We're making the right decisions to bring the solution to an end.
To bring the solution to an end, ladies. Hey, hello, welcome to the show. Just paying attention to the words. I'm sorry. That's a big mistake on my part. Quote, funny quote of the week. I guess this would be my nomination. Apropos of the discussion a few weeks ago about the wisdom of a little thing called student government. And also, apropos of you often hear people talk about the disconnect, recent addition to the language, the disconnect between Washington and the rest of the country. For example, when the whole Monica thing was going on, people in Washington, the aforementioned Cokie Roberts, sans big rack and black wig, was talking about, you know, how the people in the country, the yuck factor that would motivate the people in the country. Of course, the people in the country didn't, most of them, us didn't experience the yuck factor the way Cokie did. And then they started talking about the disconnect. Well, okay, here's a great illustration of the disconnect between us and the people in Washington. This from Ken Duberstein, who used to be Ronald Reagan's chief of staff. This is from an article in the Washington Post by Sally Quinn, who about once a year rouses herself to write these "Why Don't People Like Washington the Way We Love Washington?" articles. She's the wife of Benjamin Bradley, who was apotheosized in All the President's Men, played by the late, what was his name? Jason Robards. Thank you very much, Bob Dunn. Our research department today, Bob Dunn, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, Ken Duberstein, in the Sally Quinn article in the Washington Post, he was Ronald Reagan's chief of staff, and he never left Washington, because they don't. He says the people who migrate to Washington are, quote, the cream of the crop. Continuing the quote, you don't get elected class president unless you're good, unquote. There's the disconnect right there, ladies and gentlemen. In for remedial work after the class, Ken Duberstein, who believes, quote, you don't get elected class president unless you're good, unquote. There are nothing but high achievers here, he continues to say. But my mind reels back to the guy who was elected class president when I was in college, and I knew him. And, well, let's go down the good parts. He looked good in the suit ads he posed for in the college paper. And that would be the end of that list. Anyway, Ken, that's the quote. You don't get elected class president unless you're good. Now, another follow-up. And maybe this is the definitive answer to the question that we were asking here most of last year, apropos of the now I miss them, you know? It's the thing about ubiquitous commercials or relentless commercials, relentless in their ubiquity, is the minute they're gone, like with the hammering stops, you know? Oh, man, I miss that hammering. I miss that Chinese interrogation. So we were asking last year, is Bill Shatner the joke, or does he get the joke? You see what I mean? Does he get the joke, or is he the butt of the joke? So again, in the Washington Post this week, here's Bill Shatner. You ask me, do I get the joke? Yes, I get the joke. The joke is I know I can't sing. The non-joke is that I'm trained in iambic pentameter, and I know rhythm and lyric and words that convey meaning. A good lyric is a piece of poetry, and that's my milieu. The music is the joke, and the poetry is its grounding, unquote. So that would that answer the question? Is he no? Now, here's the tragedy. The famous album on which he first sang, The Transformed Man, he conceived it as a high art project. I'm kind of quoting here. He'd take famous dramatic soliloquies and couple them with what he saw as compatible pop songs. You have the lines from Cyrano de Bergerac, Shatner says. Would I calculate and scheme, live in fear, make visits instead of rhymes, meet all the right people. Cyrano's a man who's lost everything, and then you've got Mr. Tambourine Man, which is a drug song. The song is about losing everything, so the two pieces work together. And now the tragedy enters the picture. I went, quoting Shatner, I went on Johnny Carson to do it, and it's 6 minutes long, that's too long, they say. You've either got to cut the monologue or the song. Okay, I'll cut the monologue and do the song. So no one knows the context. Now, so now you've got some idiot DJ playing Mr. Tambourine Man that ends with me screaming, Mr. Tambourine Man! And what am I going to do, go on and argue with some idiot DJ who thinks it's funny? Unquote Bill Shatner. So it's the DJ's fault, don't you know, ladies and gentlemen? It's always the idiot DJ. It's not because this was high art. You know, you put DJs in the presence of high art, somebody is always bound to make a mistake. So for those of you who said he was in on the joke, remedial work for you after the show. Now, back to the China thing. Maybe. Yeah, okay. This from the Wall Street Journal. Not necessarily your left-wing periodical, ladies and gentlemen. Not necessarily an enemy of other conservative publishers. But the Wall Street Journal, at least an editorial board member of the Wall Street Journal, was keeping track during the China plane deal of the coverage of the story in this person's favorite New York newspaper, the New York Post, owned by a conservative press magnate, name supplied on request. Quote from the Wall Street Journal, clearly the U.S.-China face-off was one the New York Post could have done without. As a source at News Corporation told me, writers and editors at the Post are on pins and needles over this story, not knowing what we can and can't say. To the best of my knowledge, nobody has been given any direct orders from above to take it easy on China. Then again, nobody has to be told. Unquote. Oh, I didn't say anything. I made no comment, did I? Did I make any? No, the comments are going to be reserved for this fine story. For those of you who actually believe the Nielsen ratings mean anything, that they mean anything other than, oh, here are the Nielsen ratings, that is to say, that they represent some reality. Yes, those were air quotes, you heard. This from a magazine that doesn't pay its writers, Inside.com, most Americans know how to navigate daylight savings time. Nielsen, on the other hand, hasn't got it quite straight. Though the research firm's mainframe computer had been adjusted for daylight saving time, Nielsen acknowledged this week that a coding error, this is a new good excuse, a coding error, has a very serious coding error, caused it to revert to standard time after routine maintenance on Sunday. Well, there's your problem right there. Who does routine maintenance on Sunday? Corrupting the data it collected from homes that have meters that day, which included the highly anticipated final round of the Masters golf tournament, as well as David Duchovny's appearance on the X-Files. When the numbers finally appeared more than a day late, many of the preliminary figures seemed a little peculiar to the network executives who live and die by these numbers, particularly those at Fox and CBS Sports. The Nielsen ratings, as reported, suggested that CBS's Masters coverage faded considerably toward the end of the broadcast, just when the battle between Tiger Woods and his combatants began to escalate, a trend that would seem highly unlikely. Nielsen also reported that Sunday's Masters telecast trailed the 1997 Masters, also won by Tiger Woods. Now it turns out that was wrong. Nielsen ratings were wrong, ladies and gentlemen, because they coding error, because machines went back to standard time, you see. Just like we do. Fox noted that the X-Files came in an almost 40% drop from its average, a glaring result since the return of David Duchovny would suggest at least normal ratings, if not better. After it was alerted to these and other irregularities, Nielsen took the highly unusual step of recalling the data. The data were recalled. Not the individuals who screwed up. They're still on the job. But the data have been recalled, and the data have been punished. The data have been sent to its room. Their room. The entire numbers for the week of April 2 through the 8th, during which, according to the mistaken data, the top four networks, well, one of them isn't really a network, were separated by only 0.5 rating points. The pullback leaves more than bragging rights in the lurch. Millions of dollars in TV ad time could also be affected. TV veterans say the recall, while not the first for Nielsen, was among the most high profile. We let the networks down, said Jack Loftus, Nielsen's vice president of communications. We made a series of mistakes on Sunday, and we apologize for releasing data that was incorrect. Of course, wrong verb with data, but, you know, that's just a series of mistakes that they made. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're going to be so bold and so reckless as to do routine maintenance on Sunday, the lesson is, please be on the lookout for coding errors.
Ask me how do I feel? Ask me now that we're cozy and clinging. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a bell, I'd be ringing.
From the moment we kiss tonight, that's the way I just gotta behave. And if I were a lamp I light, and if I were a banner I'd wave, ask me how to feel little me with my quiet upbringing. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a gate, I'd be swinging. And if I were a watch, I'd surely be popping my spring. And if I were a bell, I'd go ding dong, ding dong, ding. Ask me how do I feel from this chemistry lesson I'm learning. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a bridge, I'd be burning. Well, I know my morale would crack from the wonderful way you look. And if I were a duck, I'd quack. And if I were a goose, I'd be cooked. Ask me how to feel, ask me now that we're softly caressing. Well, if I were a saddle, I'm sure I'd be splashing my dressing. And if I were a season, I'd surely be spring. And if I were a bell, I'd go ding dong, ding dong, ding. I'm learning. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a bridge, I'd be burning. Well, I know my morale would crack from the wonderful way you look. And if I were a duck, I'd crack. And if I were a goose, I'd be good. Ask me how to feel, bless me now, then softly caressing, baby. Well, if I were a style, I'm sure I'd be splashing my dressing. And if I were a season, I'd surely be spring. And if I were a bell, you know if I were a bell. Oh, if I were a bell, I'd go ding dong, ding dong, ding.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, just having some purified water. That wouldn't make you suspicious, would it? It's not pure water. It's purified. What was it before it was purified would be the only question I would be entertaining at this moment. Ladies and gentlemen, you know that, speaking of ratings, one of my persistent theories has been that the ratings leadership of the NBC Nightly News has been due in no small part to the number of times during the broadcast that Tom Brokaw says the word tonight. I'm beginning to reevaluate that theory, and here is this week's evidence from Tom Brokaw.
Good news on Wall Street. The Dow bounces back over 10,000, but is the worst really over tonight? What the smart money is saying. While almost no one is ready to say the worst is over, An up day is an up day, and very welcome in these times. NBC's Ann Thompson tonight with the Smart Money. And if you're looking for some encouraging news on the 24 Americans in China tonight, it may be in the statement of Chinese President Jiang Zemin. We begin tonight with NBC's Jim Mikulski at the Pentagon. Jim? Thanks very much, NBC's Jim Mikulski, who's at the Pentagon again tonight. The president, as you might expect, is getting no end of unsolicited advice. However, as NBC's chief foreign affairs correspondent Andrea Mitchell reports tonight, presidential choices do come with a lot of baggage. Thank you very much, NBC's Andrea Mitchell tonight. Now, health. More on that tonight from NBC's chief science correspondent Robert Mizell with a Lifeline report. And up next, NBC News in Depth tonight, a new warning about diet supplements. An exclusive look tonight at a new report on the dangers of everything from vitamins to supplements. Who is protecting the public health? NBC News in Depth tonight, an exclusive look at a new government study on the safety of dietary supplements. In Depth tonight. A frightening story tonight from Florida. Well, as NBC's Fred Francis reports from a corner of Tennessee tonight, perhaps this generation is teaching us.
Wow, only 13 tonights. Yikes. Only 13 tonights, ladies and gentlemen, still a ratings leadership, which suggests to me that the correlation is not to the ratings, but to the economy. As the economy goes down, see, last year at the height of the economy, Tom was saying tonight an average of 17 to 18 times a broadcast. Now, with the economy faltering, it's down to 13. So that will be our operative hypothesis from this point on. And, of course, the question that remains is, what do you mean from everything from supplements to vitamins? And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for me. This is Le Show. So, of course, I would be reading the trades for you. It's a thing I do. And this is from Advertising Age. SUVs shrink as their numbers grow. All right, I'll read it for you. Three auto marketers are rating ad campaigns for their sports utility vehicles as the category continues to expand with new entries. Consider this. There are now 54 SUV models. This will jump to over 80 models in 2003. According to Doug Scott, SUV marketing manager at Ford Motor Company. Oh, he must be proud. He must be busting his buttons. At least 13 new or updated models have bowed since fall, including the small Ford Escape. Well, that's a good suggestion. The Escape. Because it's both the name of the car and it tells you what to do when it rolls over. Escape! And the Toyota Highlander. At least 10 more new or freshened SUVs are coming this year. That's not the stuff that they put in the cabs in New York. They're talking about redesign. Among them, Chrysler Group's small Jeep Liberty and the first SUV from the Saturn division, the small View, VUE. Ford division, Mercury, and General Motors Cadillac division all launch ad campaigns this month for mid-size SUVs. The small SUV category is growing fastest, and some weakness is appearing among large SUVs, says Jim Mateka, an automobile consultant. The segment overall is looking like it's getting more mature. But there's still room for innovative new products. Ford launches its 2002 Explorer. And Ed McElhaney, brand manager of Explorer, expects current Explorer owners to account for at least half the sales this year. To those who still have Explorers from as far back as the early 1990s, who may still be alive. That was my interpolation. Ford will send a direct mail piece. They'll also be invited to one of the seven No Boundaries Experience test drive events this year. Bring your helmets, everybody! A Ford executive. Let's see who it is. Oh, Doug Scott. Yeah, he isn't concerned about last year's Firestone tire recall hurting new Explorer sales. He said, 85 to 90% of owners in all the focus groups and phone interviews said they'd buy another Explorer without Firestone tires. And to attract prospects, a series of four sweepstakes arise in June. In other news of SUVs, the 02 Cadillac Escalade has a new campaign showing the vehicle evading traffic cones that morph into missiles, says the creative director of the ad. We tried to get an emotional appeal of what it's like to drive this vehicle. Just get Shane. Shane's available, ladies. I swear he is. And he's so darn cute. I just want to have a moment with those Ford Explorer owners in those focus groups. I actually would just like to see the questions that they were asked and to see their bruises. Anyway, that's the SUV picture, ladies and gentlemen. Picture that becomes clearer as I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature, of course. Now, it's time to get back to that China thing one more time. As you know, the EP-3 aircraft, the surveillance aircraft, the slow-flying prop plane, is still under Chinese custody, although the 24 crew members have returned to Whidbey Island in the Seattle area of Washington State. And the United States achieved this result by getting the Chinese to accept a letter from the American ambassador that included, in two instances, the words, very sorry. Very sorry for the loss of life of the Chinese pilot, Wang Wei. Was his nickname Corrigan by any chance? I don't know. Anyway, Wang Wei, who died, very sorry about that, and very sorry, really very sorry, for the invasion of Chinese airspace, which was involved when the United States plane landed on Hainan Island. Not Hainan Island, Hainan Island. So that was the letter, and it was worked over in great detail to get the wording exactly right. And, of course, George W. Bush, not a master of words, as we know. Let the pros do that. But I have learned that in addition to that letter, and in a slightly more sincere vein, because that was all diplomatic language, the administration also sent a cassette, audio cassette of George W. Bush himself addressing the Chinese in the only language he believes they really understand, country music.
We're very sorry we bumped into your plane. We're very sorry your hotshot pilot went down the drain. We do what's right just because we ought. We're very sorry that we got caught. We're very sorry, that's two, that we got caught. We're very sorry, we were flying so close to your land. We're very sorry, that buyers are now the bought. We're very sorry that we got caught. Ooh, we're very sorry that we got caught. We're very sorry. Taiwan's gonna get some new arms. We're very sorry that the way you're in is harms. An apology is the only thing you sought. So we're very sorry. Got caught. We're very sorry that we got caught. Last verse coming up. We're very sorry.
Sorry.
This must have been a wound to your pride.
Sorry.
We're very sorry. Seems like nothing thickens like the plot. We're very sorry, sorry that we got caught. Catch you later.
We're very sorry,
sorry that we got caught.
Woo, 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 woo. Said I knew.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know that Attorney General John Ashcroft announced this week that there would be a closed-circuit telecast of the execution of Timothy McVeigh, the man convicted of the Oklahoma City bombing. The closed-circuit telecast for the benefit of the relatives of the victims. Well, you can imagine that the new Attorney General has his hands full with this particular project. He must, even on a holiday weekend, be fielding all kinds of calls.
I'm patching you through to the Attorney General now, Mr. King.
Yeah, thanks.
Ashcroft, God bless you. Hello.
Thanks, I didn't sneeze. Mr. Attorney General, good to hear your voice.
Good to have it. Is this Larry?
Yes, sir. I'm in Los Angeles. We got the best deli in the world here.
Well, I'm sure you do. I hear you're having a cool spring out there.
Yeah, colder than Ted Turner's divorce lawyer. But, you know, I get the wife and the kids. They love it.
Larry, I'm kind of busy at the moment.
Mr. Attorney General, am I right or am I wrong? Pound for pound, Joe Louis was still the greatest boxer ever to set foot in a ring.
Well, I'm sure he was, Larry. You know an awful lot about sports.
Hey, keep an eye on Pearl Harbor. It's going to be this summer's big smash film.
Well, I don't actually go to the movies, Larry. Although Mrs. Ashcroft and I did rent Saving Private Ryan.
Great film. Great film. Uh-huh. You don't forget the Oscars. You ask me, Spielberg deserves a Nobel. Hey, anyway, enough schmoozing.
Well, and frankly, Larry, I don't have time for conversation either. I've got a lot of work to do on this Timothy McVeigh execution. You know, it's our first federal execution in decades.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody remembers anything about procedure. There's just no institutional memory in this place.
Well, Mr. A.G., that's why I was calling. I saw that you've approved closed-circuit telecasting of the...
Nice try, Larry, but your people from Atlanta have already called, and like everybody else, they've been told unequivocally, no public release of any of the images of that feed. It's strictly for the relatives of the victims. The FBI is encrypted.
I know all that. I know, sir. The guys in Atlanta are already working on an incredible computer simulation of the execution they're going to put on the air instead. Best in the business.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How do they do... Well... Nothing we can do about that.
But that's not why I was calling.
No.
I was just wondering, you know, on the feed,
uh-huh.
Who's going to host?
What do you mean?
You know, who's going to do the good evenings or the good mornings? We're here, he's here, there's the table, that's the needle, you know. Hosting, like you'd do if you were having an execution in your own home.
Well, gosh... We just haven't given it a thought.
No.
I mean, I guess I just assumed the warden or the head of security.
Yeah,
or...
Well, look, I mean, let me get this straight.
Uh-huh.
It's the first federal execution in more than 20 years.
That's right.
And the exclusive live TV coverage is going to be hosted by some guy who doesn't know which end of the camera to stoop?
Well, I mean, this is... Larry, this is a very straight-ahead feed.
No, I know.
It's not meant for entertainment or anything like that. It's
I know. It's about closure.
That's right.
It's about an end... To the reverberations of the tragedy. I know, that's all in my intro.
Your intro?
Look, John, by the way, you got to come back on my show. We'll have the best panel in the business there with you. No pressure.
Well,
but yeah, look, you're going to suddenly think about this in the last minute, right? Who are you going to get then?
Well,
couple books months in advance, you don't like to work that much anymore anyway. Bernie Shaw you could get, but one thing you don't want is people falling asleep at this thing. Random might do it. It's in Texas.
Larry, yeah. I just don't think this is an appropriate conversation to be having.
Yeah. I know what it is. It's the money, right? It's tied to budgets, and Larry King must cost a fortune. And
No, I know what you cost. Mm. It's amazing the files they have here. You know, it didn't stop when Hoover died.
I bet. All right. Well, look, John, all I can tell you is people think television is as simple as, just turning on a camera and a couple lights. You're subjecting these relatives to maybe the most intense television experience they're ever going to have in their lives.
Well.
They need someone they know to go through it with them. Mm. They need someone who can acknowledge the solemnity of it.
Sure.
And then, when it's over, who can share some of the best of Yogi Berra's wit and wisdom with them to, end the thing on a little up note.
I'll talk to my people, Larry.
Do that, will you? Because I'd be interested to know how that...
Everything I do gonna be funky from now on.
Yeah.
Everything I do gonna be funky from now on.
I just to be myself and do my thing. A little soul can't do no harm.
Yeah.
Everything I do gonna be funky from now on. Yeah. Yeah.
Everything I do.
From now on,
yeah, everything I do gonna be funky.
Yeah, from now on, yeah. Some may say I got no class, but I'm doing what I wanna do. So groove with me if you can, or just do what you can do. Why? I'm on fire. Yeah.
Everything I do gonna be funky from now on.
Yeah.
Everything I do gonna be funky from now on.
Never before have I felt so good just being natural. But deep inside I'm free. So let your hair down and get down with it. Who's to say what's right or wrong? Everything I do gonna be funky from now on. Yeah,
so that's everything I do gonna be funky.
Yeah,
from now on.
Yeah,
everything I do gonna be funky.
It just dawned on me I'm available for that hosting job, too. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go out and find one of those Easter parades, probably the strange one, because I'd like to see Cokie Roberts with a big rack and a black wig, or her, somebody that looks like that. So, you know what? That's going to put a a lid on this week's edition of Le Show. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, and on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz. And on your computer, whenever you want it, at www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like everybody covering the China story without fear or favor. If you would agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Tip of the Le Show chapeau to the man who makes all of these French Quarter broadcasts of Le Show possible, Mr. Bob Dunn. Happy Easter to you, sir. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, the satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. And now from the home away from home of the homeless, so long, everybody, and happy Easter.